Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. All of the medical knowledge in the world won't help a doctor if her patient doesn't understand what it takes to be a patient, like how to manage medications or schedule follow-up appointments when they're needed. And many doctors are unaware of the powerful factors within a community that could undercut or even negate their medical advice and care. These are real health challenges found in communities throughout Baltimore and beyond. Medicine for the Greater Good, based at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center, works to bridge this knowledge gap by partnering with communities and extending medical personnel into communities to share health literacy and make medical information and resources more available. Since 2013, scores of projects in Baltimore have reached more than 3,000 people. The program was co-founded by Hopkins faculty members Dr. Ariel Green, Dr. Colleen Christmas, and Dr. Panagis Galeatsetos. Galeatsetos, known to his patients as Dr. G, is here in the studio today to tell us more about medicine for the greater good. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Glad to be here.
How did medicine for the greater good get started?
You mentioned the three co-founders, and Ariel and Colleen have their own stories, because from their standpoint, I began in 2011, more as a lecture series. But for me, I have a personal story that I like to share when I think about why medicine for the greater good not only had to be found, but is needed for 21st century physicians in training. Back early on in my intern year, this was about 2010, I just graduated medical school. I'm excited. I'm a new doctor, have the MD after my name. I think I'm going to make a world of change. I believe I'm going to fulfill everything I put down on my personal statement. And within four to 6 weeks, I was frustrated. Part of me actually even felt lied to by medicine. I could tell you, for instance, the pathophysiology, the genetics behind diabetes. I knew every single drug. I knew its side effects. But all this knowledge, and even sharing it with my patients, did not keep them from overcoming their diabetes. It didn't prevent them from having a hospitalization for a diabetic exacerbation. And that frustrated me. There was clearly something non-biological happening that is undoing my biological solutions. And knowing this bit of knowledge, it wasn't until I did a home visit in November of my intern year still to go see a patient, Mr. H. Now, where I trained at Hopkins Bayview, we do a lot of home visits. And I bless her heart because I think that gives you a piece of knowledge that I believe is needed to better understand our patients. We need to know the science, we need to know the patient, but we need to know the community that they come from. And so this patient we go to see is Mr. H. Now, I met Mr. H in the cardiac ICU after I had a heart attack. He's in his 60s. He says to me, oh, I have no past medical history when he came. I said, well, that's true because you avoided seeing doctors for 40 years. And while he may have not come up with a diagnosis beforehand, he'd left with six new diagnoses, ranging everywhere from coronary artery disease to diabetes. And he left with 12 medications. So we go and visit Mr. H. He lives in a community that I grew up close to. He lived in Dundalk. I grew up in the Greektown, Hollandtown area. And I said, Mr. H, you know, you're taking a lot of medications. How are you managing them? He's like, oh, Dr. G, come with me. He takes me into the kitchen. He pulls down his jar and he shows me his jar. He goes, every morning I scoop out 12 medications.
And he's dumped them all in one jar.
And, you know, Mr. H, over his lifetime, has acquired great skills to be a great carpenter. He's a great husband of 30 plus years. He's a great father to his daughters, community member, but being a patient is clearly hard. And that is not his fault. You know, I took years of training to become a physician. Nurses take years of nursing training to become nurses. Patients become patients overnight. And it's medicine and managing their healthcare is challenging. So at that moment, I recognized I needed a solution. And growing up around this area, I actually knew of some of the community members, and some way, shape, or form, I ended up talking to his priest at his local congregation, who in turn helped schedule people once a week to go out and visit him to make sure the medications were set for that week appropriately. So that was kind of a eureka moment of working with communities from a variety of types, specifically faith-based organizations sometimes. But that to me recognized that's our other pillar, to go into an understanding the health disparities that patients face, the health literacy challenges that they face. You have to work with them. And Mr. H, bless his heart, was that eureka moment for me. We took that knowledge over those years. And when I was a chief resident at Hopkins Bayview, we made Medicine for the Greater Good a formal curriculum for the Hopkins Bayview residents in 2013.
And so that means what? Residents do study, do what?
Right. So I think there's plenty of residencies out there who get their resident physicians involved with the community. At Hopkins Bayview, it's a formal requirement. To graduate as a Hopkins Bayview doctor from their residency program, you must have worked in the community in some fashion through a Medicine for the Greater Good initiative or an MGG-approved initiative.
So give me an example of what that might mean for any given resident.
When we ask students, when we ask resident physicians to participate in Medicine for the Greater Good, we leave it up to them to decide how much of their energy they'd like to devote. So it's a spectrum of decisions that they have to make. So one could be, I'm going to go and be at a health fair for an hour. Well, that, you know, we'll say that's enough to qualify for your 3 years of residency to pass Medicine for the Greater Good. If we didn't put them or hold them accountable to do anything, they may have done nothing. Then the other end of the spectrum are resident physicians who say, no, I want to be part of a project to measure some outcomes and see if we're making an impact in the community. One of our projects we've had actually that predates Medicine for the Greater Good back in 2011 is when it formally kicked off is our Lay Health Educator Program at Bayview, where we reach out to the community. We ask them to come and be part of a training session for about 8 to 10 weeks to learn about common health issues. And then they go back to their community and talk about it and lead health initiatives for that community. The teachers of those sessions are resident doctors who lead them, talk to the community members, inform them about diabetes or high blood pressure, and about more importantly, about health resources that they can take back to the community and what health projects they can implement in their community to help them out.
And this is the Lay Health Program?
Yes.
Are the partners then off for that program in particular often houses of worship?
Yes. So the Lay Health Educator Program predominantly has been members of faith-based organizations from the Christian community, variety of denominations, to the Jewish community, to the Islam community.
Do you select which communities to work with or do they find you?
I think one of the challenges in the beginning was when we had this notion, we want to work with a community. But what does a community mean? Right. When we get data from the Baltimore City Health Department, for instance, it's listed as neighborhoods, it's listed as zip codes. And the challenge here, though, is I can't expect to walk into a zip code and expect everyone in that zip code to want to work together. So to work with a community, Dr. Richard Bennett, the president of Hopkins Bayview, and Dr. Daniel Hale, who was brought on from Florida to work at Bayview, they've had about 2 decades worth of experience of working with religious partners, faith-based organizations. So we said, well, let's work with religious groups first because it's a collection of adults. They gather pretty frequently. They have an innate sense of trust. There's community leaders. So if we can talk to them and earn their trust, then they can help us get the health messages across to their communities. So yes, in the beginning, we did work a lot more with faith-based organizations. But since then, we've worked with local schools. We've worked with public housing units. In my opinion, the biggest challenge is to define what a community means, but I usually try to seek them out. Yes, and other times they do seek us out. In my heart, what I love to do is be able to have Medicine for the Greater Good in a multidisciplinary approach with a lot of parties from business personnel to physicians and everything else in between and politicians working together. Because in my heart, there's no reason why this city shouldn't be the healthiest city in the world. We have the resources and we have the manpower and woman power. So that's what I would love to see happen is everyone works with this large community of Baltimore City.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Dr. Panagis Galeatsetos, one of the founders of Medicine for the Greater Good. You've mentioned trust a few times. Is trust a big challenge, developing trust?
It is. And actually, when I look back on the work that Medicine for the Greater Good has done, being a physician scientist and being someone in the academic world, our currency, our livelihood is built on measuring outcomes, publishing and writing. And unlike working in a lab, I can't try to expedite my outcomes. I need to take my time. We need to take our time to work with the community. And trust is so important. The community, you can't go in and expect the community to be ready and willing to receive your health message. You have to get to know the community. My analogy, I always tell people, it's like dating. I wouldn't go on the first date and say, let's get married. You earn his or her trust. You take your time with them. I'll never forget Congressman Elijah Cummings said something that I love stealing from him and using it. But you cannot lead where you do not go. So to sit back and think I know of community means nothing if I haven't gone out there and personally experienced and sat with them. And even with faith-based organizations, I love going out and listening to their worship services. When I went out with Imam Hassan, when he invited us to come to his masjid, his mosque, he invited me to come upstairs and pray with them. And that was great. You know, it's just one bit of insight to get to know the community and to continue earning their trust. I tell them, I'm not a salesman. You can hear about what we have to offer. You may never want to use our resources, and I will never be offended. But I want you to know that I'm here for you.
There are several offshoot programs of Medicine for the Greater Good, like Music for the Greater Good, Be More Asthma Free, and Caregiver Cafe. Tell me about one of those.
Let's go to Music for the Greater Good. When I talk about this multidisciplinary approach of going into communities and working with communities, I know, being as a physician, I may be biased. I think health should be the funnest and most enjoyable conversations to have with a human being. But it started to dawn on me pretty early on that health, it's important, people recognize it, but it's not going to draw a crowd. I'm not a rock star to bring people to come and listen to me just talk about asthma or diabetes and so forth. So I recognized I need to partner with others, maybe even have an adjunct wellness activity at that moment in order to bring people in. So we reached out to Peabody, and my colleague, actually Sarah Hoover, she in a meeting with me once said, oh, I should start a program called Music for the Greater Good. So I've asked Peabody students to come and lead a wellness activity for the kids. So while the kids are preoccupied in learning about music, I have the parents to myself and I can teach them about health topics. And I love that. Working with Sarah, we've done a few activities, one called Beats and Breathe, where we had two harpist students from Peabody come with kind of these like toy harps and taught these children at a neighborhood not too far away from Hopkins Hospital how to play the harp, right? And for these children, it was their first time ever seeing a harp. And as we have these kids preoccupied, now we have the parents to ourselves, where another organization I work with, the Baltimore Breathe Center, we taught the parents about asthma. You know, how to use inhalers, how to recognize an asthma exacerbation. So myself, my colleagues, my physicians, and a variety of other groups from Hopkins and Peabody, this multidisciplinary approach, we made the community healthier, in my belief, with some skills that they learned at that moment. And we also provided a level of wellness. And to me, this reflects back on what health should mean. Health should not be just a mere reflection of feeling well, but it should be linked to this atmosphere of a social environment that makes life meaningful. And that's where I think Medicine for the Greater Good is just one part of a bigger piece of a puzzle that's needed to work with a community.
How have residents reacted to the required extracurricular work? I mean, what do they give up to make time for this?
Yes, it's an additional few hours to spend, right, when you could have just had that time to yourself. But the experiences that we hear back from residents, because we ask them to reflect on what they did, you know, write us a little summary, 500 words, not much. Every single one of them identifies that those moments make them feel more of a doctor than the times they spent in the hospital. This is not to say one's more important than the other, but for a lot of them, it reignites the passion they had before walking into medical school. And actually, that's what I get excited about Medicine for the Greater Good. I think the community work it does is vital and important. But because we look to work with young professionals, physicians, yes, at the residency at Hopkins Bayview, but we've also included other residency programs at Hopkins. We're in the School of Nursing as well. What I love is we are impacting the professional identity of these young healthcare providers. And if we know that the next 30 years of their life, they'll recognize working with the community as part of their arsenal of medical skills and so forth, then that's the best thing I think MGG can provide, right? Future practitioners who are going to recognize to know the science, know the patient, but they have to know the community as well.
So much to talk about. I really appreciate you walking us through it. Thank you.
It's an honor to be here, yes.
Dr. Panagis Galeatsetos, one of the founders of Medicine for the Greater Good. It's a health outreach program that bridges the knowledge gap between communities and the doctors who care for them. After the break, we'll meet two community leaders who are deeply involved in introducing Medicine for the Greater Good into their communities. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about Medicine for the Greater Good, a partnership between medical personnel like doctors and communities. It makes medical information and resources more accessible. We spoke to one of the founders of Medicine for the Greater Good, Dr. G, Dr. Panagis Galeatsetos, and now we'll meet two of MGG's partners. Imam Hassan Amin is founder and director of the Muslim Social Services Agency. He's also a chaplain for Johns Hopkins Hospitals, the Baltimore Police Department, and the U.S. Park Police. He has connected medicine for the greater good to the Muslim and Syrian refugee communities here in Baltimore. Welcome, Imam Hassan.
Thank you very much, and good morning.
And also with us is Reverend Ernest King, who has won many service awards for his more than three decades of advocating for and working with young people in Baltimore. Much of his effort has gone into the Poe Homes, the city's oldest public housing community on Baltimore's west side. Welcome, Reverend King.
Thank you.
Imam Hassan, when did you first start working with medicine for the greater good?
I think it was about a little over a year ago. Dr. G, he came to me and he talked to me about wanting to come work with the Muslim community, and he told me about his program. I said, "Great! The Muslim community can certainly use what you have to offer because you want to bring the medical community into the Muslim community." And I said, "Our door is wide open in order to do that." And then he and I went about making plans on how that would look.
And what was it that you felt needed to be done? What was the connection you wanted to make happen?
Well, one was that they needed just separate, different programs sort of based on a particular health need. For example, we did a program earlier this year on, I guess it was a workshop more so, on healthy heart. And so we did it Saturday morning. People came out. We had food. And a lot of people came out and had a lot of questions about being heart healthy and in terms of also the blood pressure testing and that kind of thing. Then we had one on July 29th, which was about cancer. And so we discussed cancer, prostate cancer, and breast cancer and other types of cancer. And so that was great because it was so surprising because usually men don't come out to those kinds of events. But when they had a one on cancer, we had about 20 men and maybe about 10 women at this particular event.
So why was that? Why did it appeal to more men?
Because a lot more men they're getting more and more concerned about prostate cancer, but they don't like the way they find out how you have it, and they have to the digit go in your. You know the rest of the story.
But they're willing to talk about it.
And they also want to know what are other kind of ways in which you can test me. And they had mentioned about blood testing, that kind of thing. But the best way is the way they normally do it. But men had a lot of questions and had a lot of questions about asbestos because some men work around that. And so they wanted to know, okay, what do I do about it? Or I have it. Is there any other kind of treatment? So they wanted to know those kinds of answers to terms of asbestos.
Reverend King, how did you find out about medicine for the greater good?
Well, I met Dr. G at an event, and he got to talking to me and my president about...
Your president.
Miss Lorraine Ledbetter.
Is the president of Poe Homes.
President of Poe Homes.
Uh-huh.
And by both of us dealing with children, and he was telling us, you know, giving us information about his program, we felt it was good to introduce it to the kids in our community. We found out that Dr. G was genuine in what he was saying and doing with the first meeting of the kids, and the children was really excited.
And, so why? Tell me about that. Why were the children excited about a health discussion, or was it more than that?
It was more than that. He watched them perform. He was engaged, playing the instruments and dancing. And not only that, by us having football teams and all, and percussions becoming the main topic, we needed to bring that to the community. And he was able to talk to them, and we was able to talk to them about the medicine that was out here and the ailments that the kids was having, like asthma and all. And it was able to open them up so we could connect with them more dealing with their health issues.
So the children opened up more about...
They opened up more. Opened up more about their lifestyles. Because a lot of times they will hide, like Dr. G was saying earlier, the trust factor. They will not tell you anything unless they feel comfortable with you and feel that you are sincere with them. And he was building those bridges with the community by coming. And that meant a lot to us.
That's Reverend Ernest King, a longtime champion for youth in the Poe Homes of West Baltimore, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here with me is Imam Hassan Amin, founder and director of the Muslim Social Services Agency. Both men connected medicine for the greater good with their communities. I want to pick up on that question of trust, because obviously we hear a lot, especially in Baltimore, of a longstanding distrust between many people in the African-American community and the medical profession. You're talking about, it seems like, a more individual trust, a more personal trust, or does that larger legacy also come into play?
The trust is a larger piece in our community, because we get attacked a lot by people wanting to bring programs in. And once they bring programs in, they might stay a month and then they leave, or might, after they get what they need, they leave. And we started blocking people till we got to know them before we turned them on to more of our community. So we won't slow up that process of people getting their needs met, but the community don't get their needs met.
Well, give me a little more insight into why you felt you could trust Dr. G and medicine for the greater good.
One, he stuck to what he spoke to us about.
Give me an example. And,
one, if he said he was going to come on Tuesday, he showed up. If he had a problem, he would call, he would talk to us. He stayed consistent. And by him staying consistent, we knew he was concerned about our community, not by what he can come in our community and get and leave on. And over the year and a half, he has been consistent with bringing the program to the community.
Imam Hassan, why do you think a program like Medicine for the Greater Good was necessary for your community?
Well, for my community, it was necessary because I deal with a lot of refugees, particularly from Syria. And since 2015, my organization, we have been helping them to adjust and get resettled in America. And so he brought with him, as the Reverend just said, he was real in terms of presenting to the people the medical, connecting us to the medical community. Because he was particularly interested in the Syrians and the refugees and how they were treated, I guess, in interacting with the medical community here. And so he developed, between he and I, we developed a health lay case manager. And so he trained the people for about 5 weeks. And these new case managers were part of our community. They would be available to connect the Syrians to various medical facilities in Baltimore City that they may not know anything about because of their lack of understanding of the American system and the medical services available to them.
So these are volunteers?
These are all volunteers, part of the Muslim community, who went through, I gave about 10 people went through the training. And now they're available to help the Syrians and others, connect them to various medicines that are in Baltimore City. Not all just Hopkins, just any kind of medical facility that they may need, either mental health or physical health. They're able to do so because of the training that Dr. G's organization provided for us.
Thank you both for giving us a sense of what this means in your community. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Imam Hassan Amin, founder and director of the Muslim Social Services Agency, and Reverend Ernest King, a longtime champion for young people in the Poe Homes of West Baltimore. Both men invited medicine for the greater good into their communities. Earlier, we spoke to Dr. Panagis Galiatsetos, one of the founders of Medicine for the Greater Good, which is based at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center. We have links to more information about Medicine for the Greater Good and how you can get involved at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you've been with us. Join us again tomorrow.